And welcome to Law Matters for another fortnight, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA. Jodie Hoffman with you for the next hour. Coming up in this program, going to be letting you know about the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA elections for the Pilbara region, which will be taking place in August, and also having a chat with some pretty interesting people. One of them is Terry Janke, who is a lawyer based in New South Wales, but Terry was actually announced as the 2011 National NAIDOC Person of the Year. So we're going to be having a yarn with Terry to offer our personal congratulations and also find out all about the work that she does in the legal area, which is a lot to do with copyright. And very shortly on the program, having a chat with Les Mauser, who is also over East. And Les is one of the co-chairs of the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples. And they had their inaugural meeting in Sydney during NAIDOC week. So a pretty exciting time as they look to the future for the Congress and busily making plans. And we'll be chatting with Les about that and also his recent trip to Geneva. That's coming up soon here on Noongar Radio.
My life.
And there's Ice House and Hey Little Girl here on 100.9 FM Noongar Radio. Good to have your company on the Law Matters program, which is brought to you every fortnight by the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA. Jodie Hoffman with you this hour. And I guess over the last couple of months, we've spent a lot of time talking about NAIDOC Week because it's such a significant time for us as Aboriginal people, and there are celebrations around the country. And a huge celebration took place in Sydney this year because it was the national host city for 2011 National NAIDOC Celebrations. But the National NAIDOC Awards are part of that, and they pay tribute to the outstanding contributions that Indigenous individuals make to their communities, to their chosen fields of endeavour, and to the broader Australian society. It's an extremely proud time, and I'm extremely happy to announce that on the program today we're going to be having a yarn with the 2011 National NAIDOC Person of the Year. Welcome to the program, Terry Janke. How are you going?
Oh, good, thanks, Jodie. Thank you for having me.
Oh, look, we're thrilled you could be part of us. Not part of it, because not only are we a legal program, but you're the NAIDOC Person of the Year. Tell us how exciting that was when the announcement was made in Sydney, Terry.
It was amazing. It was a fantastic night, and everyone was dressed up, and lots and lots of people, and it was just such an honour to get the award. It was quite emotional, but yeah, it was good to see a lot of the people that had worked with me and supported me, or, you know, you don't ever get anywhere alone. So a lot of those people were in the audience, and I just felt, really humbled and very proud.
Oh, beautiful. Well, congratulations. Tell us a bit about yourself, Terry, because you're based in New South Wales these days, but you were born in Cairns in Queensland?
Yeah, I was born in Cairns, and we moved to Canberra when I was about 10, and my dad and mum got work in Canberra, and a lot of Indigenous, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people moved to Canberra in those days, so we had, you know, the extended family and friend network there from Canberra. My heritage, I'm Wurrutsi from the Cape York region, the Aboriginal heritage, and also Miriam from Torres Strait Islands. And after going from Canberra, I did my law degree at University of New South Wales, where I moved to Sydney, and I've been living in Sydney ever since.
And it must have been so exciting to be standing in front of all those people as a proud Aboriginal woman and just sort of accepting that award, which, as I understand, was passed on to you by our own CEO, Dennis Eggington, who was the 2010 recipient of the same award.
I know, and he was so great. I mean, I have always admired Dennis's work from the, you know, and, you know, watching it from the legal point of view and the work that ALS do in WA. So it was amazing to, you know, be a lawyer and get it handed over from, someone working in the field.
How did it feel accepting the award, Terry, in terms of knowing what you've personally achieved over your career, but standing in front of all your colleagues and your community and your friends?
Well, that was a really good feeling, and at first you think, oh my God, I'm really nervous, but it actually gives you a chance when you know that you get this. For me, it was the highest accolade, you know, but that you can get a chance to recognise. I mean, you get recognised, but at the same time, everyone was there, I had the chance to recognise that, people who had known me since I was a kid, you know, and known me through university, through my early working life, and, you know, even clients and people that you see in conferences and out and about. That was really, really good.
And you've got a musical family as well as a legal one.
Well, I'm my older sister, Toni Janke, is a fantastic singer. You know, she actually was the first lawyer in the family. She was the reason why I did law, although when she graduated, she realised that she wanted to sing more, but she was always, you know, brilliant at the guitar. We actually used to sing a lot together and spend a lot of time when we were studying, singing in pubs and singing, you know, at parties on the guitar. But for her, after a few years into her working life, she decided to go back and do singing. So for me, I don't think I can sing anymore, not as well as I could then, talk too much. But yeah, Tony has achieved a lot in her singing.
Fantastic. What spurred you on as a younger woman, Terry, to actually embark on a legal career? Because it's a pretty huge decision to make, I imagine.
Yeah, I had no role models as a kid growing up. I do remember, though, Dad bringing home a book of case law and just being fascinated at how big it was and thinking, you know, who would read a book this big? But I did meet Pat O'Shane as a young woman, and there was a... I remember when I went to Year 12, they had an Aboriginal camp in New South Wales. All the New South Wales kids doing their HSC went on a camp here in Sydney, and we went and met some of the law students that were going through the Aboriginal education program at the University of New South Wales. And that was pretty inspiring, and there were, you know, people working in anti-discrimination and human rights, and I was, you know, learning about cases. I went to law school before Mabo, so it was still, you know, land rights. I think it was before the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Black Deaths in Custody was on. So, you know, to me it was all of this sort of groundswell in legal rights that was so interesting for me when I came to that Year 12 sort of camp or sort of students conference, and I went into law the year after. But as I said, my sister was already there, so she was very much wanting to be with her. It was part of the reason why I fell into law. And I actually dropped out after 3 years, not really knowing what area of law I would fit into. And I worked at the Australia Council for the Arts and the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Arts Board there. And I learned all about copyright, and, you know, people were artists, writers, Aboriginal dance companies setting up were then, you know, looking at copyright as an issue. And I thought, well, copyright and intellectual property doesn't really cover, you know, Indigenous stories or Indigenous dance or Indigenous arts that's been handed on orally and through the generations. And it just fascinated me, and that became the area that I was interested in. And I went back to law, focusing just knowing that I want to work in that area.
It's a huge area too, isn't it, Terry? I imagine if you look back over the decades, as you would have done with Aboriginal artists and their art, and what rights do they have as artists, there must have been some pretty horrific stories that you heard along the way in terms of people being ripped off.
Yeah, it was a lot of times, you know, just the blatant copying, people just seeing the art works and copying them out of textbooks or, you know, postcards that they would see of Aboriginal artist works. And because a lot of the artwork is about belonging, and Aboriginal artists paint designs that they might have rights under customary law, but then people just copy it and alter it in, you know, for other purposes, take it out of context. Now that has, you know, it takes it out of the context, and it may have a demeaning effect on the culture, but also because it can affect the legal rights with knowledge of clan designs being called into evidence, the native title, for instance. Controlling clan designs becomes very important for Indigenous traditional owners. So all of these things seem like it's just harmless, but it can affect legal rights and cultural rights and cultural identity. And some of the examples where artist works are copied straight out of educational portfolios, put on carpets, you know, without them being even asked and altered, you know, it was impacting so harshly on the artist, they didn't want to paint again, and they were even concerned that they would be shunned from their cultural life. I see cases like that. It's changed a lot since over the years, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
And I imagine that as your own company, I mean, it's Terry Janke and Company, you're lawyers and consultants based in New South Wales, that you would work not only with a lot of individuals but businesses as well?
Yes, that's right. We do. The intellectual property law had started up basically on the back of the work I'd done in the with the arts community and cultural heritage. But we work for language centres, organisations that might be looking to protect their own knowledge that they're creating. So, you know, intellectual property agreements that they might have with consultants or partners, how they protect that, particularly if there's a lot of research going on and they might be working with traditional owners, traditional knowledge, but making sure that those rights are looked after. We also do a bit of work for film makers, writers, but with the growth of Indigenous business, you know, branding and having a registered trademark becomes important to get your name out there in the marketplace, and also a way of protecting your business assets. So we also do trademark law and a lot of commercial law now, and doing a lot more work for, you know, non-Indigenous businesses as well.
I remember meeting you at a conference here in Perth in WA about 15 years ago, and there was an arts conference on. How far have things come in those 15 years in terms of the protection and the rights that are available for Aboriginal artists?
I remember that conference. That is a long time ago. Well, since then, since 15 years, we now have moral rights in the Copyright Act, which at the time, 15 years ago, they were looking to amend the Copyright Act to give creators rights of attribution to be credited as the creator, and also moral rights of integrity to keep it in its proper respectful manner, that it's not derogatory of the artist. So we've had those included into our Copyright Act, which are great for Indigenous artists. We've also had a whole lot of digital amendments because of the change in technology. And if you consider that, I remember at that conference people talking about some of the risks involved with having information and traditional knowledge available online. You know, people were just really starting to get used to having, you know, a regular website. But if you look back, if you look at what we've got now and what gets exchanged on file sharing sites and Facebook and YouTube and all of that, it is amazing. But also we've had an international governmental committee in the World Intellectual Property Organization be set up in 2000, and they're looking at protection of traditional knowledge, traditional cultural expression. And of course, the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, which includes a lot of articles relating to this area, has come through. There's been a lot of other things, but 15 years is a very long time, Jodie.
Oh, it is, isn't it? I'm speaking with Terry Janke, who is the 2011 National NAIDOC Person of the Year. Terry is also a lawyer with her own law firm in New South Wales, and looking at a lot of the issues of intellectual property protection for Indigenous artists. Terry, having served on the boards of a lot of Indigenous and non-Indigenous organisations, and as the only Indigenous director on the board of Tourism Australia, do you find that organisations as a whole are very receptive to the information that they receive, and a lot of it is, well, we weren't actually aware of how important it was that these areas were protected?
In terms of this area, it is something that people, organisations, Indigenous and non-Indigenous, need to have in terms, I think, it, you know, a lot of reconciliation action plans that are coming into play need to have these issues. They cover them in a lot of loose language, but some of the more recent ones are now moving into that, and I think that's good as people become aware of, you know, it might not just be about giving an Indigenous person a job or, you know, going and working with an Indigenous person or putting an Aboriginal artwork on the in the foyer. You've got to engage with Indigenous people and use their knowledge respectfully, and sharing of benefits and free prior informed consent. It is happening, but I do think it needs a lot more work. And just recently, last year, I was putting forward a proposal in the Wentworth lecture that I gave for the Australian Institute of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Studies. I think there's a need for Indigenous people to set some standards by having a National Indigenous Cultural Authority that won't make the decisions about who can use culture and what are the terms and what have you, but they can assist people who are being approached by, you know, researchers, filmmakers, pharmaceutical companies coming in to use traditional knowledge and traditional cultural expression. They can assist them with protocols, tools, agreements and advice and standards of, you know, that should be part of the negotiation.
In terms of when you look personally at what you're doing in the area of intellectual property, right, Terry, as an Indigenous woman, what is so rewarding to you about the work that you're doing when you're talking about the individuals that you're meeting, what the art means to our communities, and the benefits of the law in this area?
Well, I like the rewards are when, you know, you go and people, because a lot of people think it's so complex, I think. It's so hard. I don't want to know about it. I just, practicing as an artist or as a traditional owner on country or what have you. But once they get the knowledge about how it works, because a lot of the intellectual property laws affect them, even though they might not sign up or give rights, it's to do with how a work is created or how knowledge is taken. So once they get a knowledge, they become knowledge of the laws, they begin to think of how they can implement it in practice, and they start asking the questions. And for me, it's like, oh, they're now empowered to know about the law, but to draw it into how, you know, they want to deal in their world or in their business, and they can make those informed decisions. You know, and they might decide to go ahead with the project or they might not. But to me, it's about letting them be in control of their choices. So when I hear people and they're asking the questions and I'm thinking, oh, they know the knowledge, for me that's so rewarding because they're empowered.
Terry, thank you so much for having a chat with us on Law Matters for our program today. Congratulations on all of your achievements in this area, and incredibly, just very proud of you for being the recipient of the 2011 National NAIDOC Person of the Year. Don't want to let you go, though, without putting in a plug for your book as well. I don't know how you find time to write a book, but tell us about that.
Oh, I wrote a book called Butterfly Song. I love stories. That's based on going through law school, but I've drawn in the whole it's about a court case of reclaiming a butterfly brooch that gets taken from the family in the 1940s, and the story is of a young Torres Strait Islander law student who has to run the case to win back the brooch in the family. But the journey is about piecing together the evidence after so much has happened, and movements and people passing away. And I really enjoy writing, and I also just recently wrote a book with my son called Kin Island, which is a children's book for 9 to 12 readers, and that was fun too. That was about, based on a journey going back to the Torres Strait with the family where there's a cyclone. So I like writing a lot as well.
Oh, beautiful. Well, you've chosen some pretty full-on areas to divert all your energy to: family, the law profession, and being an author. Congratulations.
Thank you for having me, Jodie, and hello to everyone out there.
And yeah, we appreciate your time on the program, Terry, and hopefully we can have another yarn with you here on Law Matters before too long, and just talk some more about the area of law that you're working in, hey?
Sure, keep in touch.
All right, Terry, thanks for your time and all the best and congratulations again.
Thanks, Jodie.
Bye.
Bye.
Terry Janke, the 2011 National NAIDOC Person of the Year. Really, really lovely woman. Absolutely thrilled for Terry and all of the achievements that she's done over the years. A real inspiration, isn't she? This is the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia.
Yeah.
Second Chance here on Noongar Radio 100.9 FM. Jodie Hoffman with you from the Aboriginal Legal Service, and good to have your company on Law Matters, which is brought to you every second Wednesday by the Aboriginal Legal Service here in WA and repeated Sunday nights at 9 o'clock. Well, the first elected board of the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples took office during NAIDOC Week on the 8th of July, a hugely significant gathering and the first official meeting at the National Centre of Indigenous Excellence in Sydney. We've been keeping you up to date with the progress of the Congress and stressing the importance of our people around the country getting involved with this Congress, and like to welcome to Law Matters for the first time one of the co-chairs, Les Mauser. G'day Les, how are you going?
Yeah, very good, thanks Jodie. It's good to be on your program and hello to all the listeners.
Oh look, we're thrilled to have you on, Les, and it's a very exciting time. It must have been just such a historic and exciting occasion for you all in NAIDOC Week in Sydney.
Yeah. So I think we've got an excellent board, and I think it's one that's going to make a lot of noise and a big difference in Australia. And I'm looking forward to the 2 years ahead when I'll be working with them, and we'll be pushing what I hope will be a strong agenda for our rights.
Now, we'll remind our listeners that the eight directors that are part of the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples were elected by members and delegates of the new national body. Yourself and Jodie Bruin from over here in WA are co-chairs, and working alongside the directors being Vanessa Curnow, Dennis Eggington, our own CEO, Rod Little, Tammy Solonik, Daphne Yarram and Brian Butler. Pretty strong team there, Les.
It is a strong team, and what's even better about all this is that each one of those directors has a particular responsibility in relation to the three chambers of the National Congress. So two of the representatives elect representing individuals, two represent organisations, and two represent national and peak organisations. So we have responsibilities that we bring onto the board, and I think that's going to bring a lot of interesting approaches as to how we work.
Les, I know that through your own involvement over many years, you've not only played a major role here in Australia, but also internationally in spreading the word about some of the issues facing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples across the country. And I understand you've recently been in Geneva.
That's correct. In fact, I'll just mention, Jodie, that when I ran for the position of the National Co-Chair, I ran on the agenda of international rights of Indigenous peoples, and that I wanted to bring into Australian political system our human rights that we're entitled to and which Australia is obligated to respect. So the work that I'm doing or have done internationally, and the meeting that I've just been to overseas, is a big part of a commitment I made to our electorate that is going to be part of the way in which the National Congress works. So I've just come back from Geneva. I spent 2 weeks there. 1 week was attending a meeting about Indigenous peoples and human rights, and the other one was a meeting about a treaty, international treaty that deals with traditional knowledge and rights to genetic resources.
I know that here in Western Australia, and I guess across all parts of the world, people are busily preparing for CHOGM, being the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting that's taking place in Perth in October. Les, I'm keen to know internationally how other countries view the situation here in Australia.
Well, I've actually worked not only at the United Nations level, but I've been to, I think, four CHOGM meetings, Commonwealth Heads of Government meetings, and I know in all those instances, in fact I toured Africa back in 1988 to talk to a number of Commonwealth countries in Africa, all of them have the view that the situation in Australia is bad and needs addressing. So Australia does not have a good reputation internationally. While there are Indigenous peoples in nearly 80 countries around the world, Australia gets particular attention over the treatment of Aboriginal people, and that's because of the wide gap that exists between the standards that Australians enjoy in this country and the poverty in which most of our people live, and the denial of our rights to our land and control, self-determination over our own lives. So this is fairly well understood around the world and gets a lot of concern from different countries.
I imagine that places like Geneva and also New York over the last couple of years for the United Forum on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples there, they're not simplistic forums that are run every day, but can you give us an overview of how international forums do run, Les, in terms of you being a delegate and presenting there as an Aboriginal person from Australia? How does the actual forum work at places like Geneva?
Well, there's two bodies. You've mentioned New York and you mentioned Geneva. In New York, there's a body called the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, which meets for 2 weeks every year. And that body is to advise the Economic and Social Council on its decisions and recommendations to various governments about Indigenous peoples. The other forum is in Geneva, and that's the Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and that body is to advise the Human Rights Council on the human rights issues of Indigenous peoples around the world. Now, both of these bodies are very powerful. That is, that they're very high in the UN system. They're just two steps below the General Assembly, and they are the authorities which are advising the United Nations systems on how to handle the rights of Indigenous peoples. And what is most interesting is that both of these bodies have Indigenous peoples sitting on their board. So the expert mechanism has 4 out of 5 of the appointees are Indigenous peoples, and on the permanent forum, I'm not sure of the exact number, but it's something like 10 out of the 16 members who sit on the permanent forum are Indigenous peoples from around the world. So we have a very important position now in the United Nations system.
Let's talk about your own background, Les, and what inspired you to take yourself off into this area of life.
Yes, well, in fact, it was the native title laws in Australia that took me to Geneva. You'll remember back in, there was a change of government in 1996, and there was talk about changing the Native Title Act. And then in 1998, the legislation changed to create what is now discriminatory laws against our rights to our territories. And at that time, the government was not interested in having any dialogue with the Aboriginal people about how to handle its affairs. And so we had nowhere to go other than to go to the United Nations. I was part of a team that went to talk to the treaty body, which is responsible for the Convention on Race Discrimination. And we put in our issues to that treaty body that immediately then took up an inquiry with the government to find out more about how it was treating native title. But then the treaty body has met with Australia, I think, 6 times since 1988 and broadened its agenda to deal not only with land rights but many other aspects about policies and programs that are running in Australia. So that was what took me overseas, was basically not being able to dialogue in government about our rights and going to the United Nations. That's developed into a very, very big issue in the time that I've been going. Something like 11 years after I started going there, we got the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples through the General Assembly. And now, for the last 4 years, it's been a completely different dialogue going on of where we're able to talk to governments at the international level about what our rights should be and what the obligations of governments are.
And with the role of the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples, that's going to be a very important process in continuing that dialogue here in Australia, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and I'm making it quite clear that this body is established in accordance with Article 18 of the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and that article says that Indigenous peoples, in this case Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, have the right to choose their own representatives and to be making decisions about their lives and their futures. There are other articles that follow that which talk about the right of free, prior, informed consent to any issues that affect our lives, the right to be involved in the delivery of programs and services to our community, and so on. So it's those things that I'm concentrating on to ensure that we have a relationship with the national government and the state and territory governments to get those rights realised in Australia.
And how important is it that the existing membership base for the Congress continues to be built upon, Les?
It's very important. There's been a strong membership drive over the last 18 months to get members on. I know there's a big reluctance. A lot of my friends from where I come from in Queensland were saying, oh, we want to hold back and see. We think it's a hollow body. We think the government's running it and so on. And they've held off. But I know a lot of those friends are now saying to me they want to get on board and join because they've seen the quality of the board of directors. They've seen the sort of agendas that we want to talk about. And they're starting to come on board. And my approach is, is, you know, people should get on and join on. It's free. It doesn't cost anything. And if they don't like what we're doing, they can either protest and change what we're doing as members, or they can go off the board. So there's nothing to lose in this. So my view is it'll be our performance. People can judge us on our performance, but the best way is to get on and join as a member now, not wait for another year, and really put some weight behind the work that we're doing.
I'm speaking with Les Mauser, who is one of the co-chairs of the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples, recently returned from Geneva. Les, the area of work that you've thrown yourself into is an incredibly busy one, not just here on the ground in Australia, but internationally as well. When you actually get time to sit back and reflect on where we are as an Aboriginal people, how do you view the last 20 years in terms of that was then and this is now?
Well, I've written a piece just recently to say that we've been sliding backwards since 1992, so that's nearly 20 years now. In 1992, we had a number of things that had happened. The report on the Royal Commission into Death and Custody had just come out. We had the Barbo decision in the High Court. We've also had the commitment to a social justice package being made by the Keating government, and quite a few other things that happened around that period in time. The Native Title Act was about to be put in place in 1993. So that was, I think, a high point for us. But when you track what's happened year by year since that time, you can see that we've been losing something every year. It's been going backwards. And this is the time, I think, now, with the government that's in place at the moment and with this National Congress in place, to really start the fight back to get back the rights that we had envisaged we would have back in 1992. It's a case of we want to see these things now put back on the table, and we want to have our rights as peoples to determine our futures and ensure that we survive generations into the future. We want that guaranteed.
Recently here on the program, Les, we've had Social Justice Commissioner Mick Gooder, we've had the Chief Justice of Western Australia, Wayne Martin, we've had Sam Jeffries on, all talking about similar issues in terms of, you know, things are going backwards, particularly when you look at reports like the one that was recently tabled in Parliament, Doing Time, Time for Doing, which showed that the incarceration rates of Aboriginal people were worse now than they were 20 years ago when the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody was done.
Yes, well, I mean that's a shocking report, and the first thing I said when I had heard about this report and the results was to say, what was the government doing during those years when the rates of our incarceration of our youth went up by 50%? What were their policies and what were they doing? The fact is, they were sitting on their hands, they were blissfully ignoring all this, and they were doing nothing, and that's just atrocious. And it's not just in the area of youth incarceration; it's about adult imprisonment. And it's about many other areas of policy, including land rights, that the government has just sat on its hand and done nothing and watched it deteriorate significantly. And there's no excuse for that. Even though they have now the policy of closing the gap, the fact is the government has not been paying attention to its responsibility, and we have been discriminated against in Australia's history over this last 20-year period.
The National Congress will play a huge role in giving our people a voice across the country, Les. As you look ahead to the future, you obviously need to remain optimistic, and I want to know what motivates you to do the work that you do and how you see the future for our people here in this country.
Well, look, I think that I was born an Aboriginal person, and I, you know, I didn't choose my life; it chose me. I've been a fighter from day one. I've been involved in protests and rallies and on the street and so on. I think that I have certain experience and skills that I can actually make changes, and I believe over the years I've been successful in making a number of significant changes. And that's the way I feel now. I don't feel like I'm tired and worn out, that I've grown older and just want to relax. I really feel more determined to fight now than I ever was in my life. And I would hope that this is the way that a lot of people around me feel. I'm talking to a lot of people that are saying the same things back to me. And, you know, I'll be putting out a call on there to say, you know, let's reignite our struggle for justice, and let's find the vigour that we had there before. Instead of just sitting back and waiting for somebody else to do something, let's get in there and put our hands in and change it ourselves.
During the NAIDOC week meeting that was held in Sydney of the Congress, you're on the record of saying governments are on notice that the rights of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples will be protected and promoted, and we're also focused on growing the Congress and fulfilling our potential as a new voice in the nation's political landscape. A very exciting time ahead, I imagine, Les.
Yes, definitely, and I'll be trying to give that some real substance next month when Parliament is sitting. We will be in Canberra, the Board of Directors, and we'll be trying to meet with the various people in the Parliament, not just with the government, but also with the opposition, also with the Green Party and Independents and so on. We'll be talking to all of them, and we'll basically be trying to determine for ourselves who in that Parliament is there to support our agendas, what issues do they know about, what don't they know about, and then also commission them as to how they will work with us to, you know, help achieve those goals of having our rights in Australia on the record and respected.
Les, we really appreciate your time on Law Matters. It is a fortnightly program by the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA, and while we touch on legal issues predominantly, it's also very important to keep our community informed of the broader issues, because it's a very holistic approach, isn't it, to looking at some complex solutions in terms of all the contributing factors. And I think the Congress is a really exciting chapter in our history, and I wish you all the best, and look forward to forthcoming chats with you here on this program to keep our community informed.
Yes, Jodie, thanks very much for the opportunity to speak on your program, and I'm hoping that when I do come on again in the future that I'll be able to talk about some of the things we've actually achieved. So I'm looking forward to the time ahead.
We look forward to it too. Les Melzer, thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you, and thanks for listening. Bye.
Les Melzer is one of the co-chairs of the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples. If you do want more information about the Congress, you can log on to www.nationalcongress.com.au. This is Law Matters, just about out of time for another week. Need to remind you, though, that the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA Executive Committee election for the Pilbara region only will take place from the 15th to the 19th of August. If you want to know how to vote, what you need to do, ring our returning officer on free call 1800 019 900. Thanks for your company on the program. Look forward to it again next time.